this is Sandy Rios, and we're going to have a very important discussion today because it affects each and every one of you. If you ever go to the doctor, if you ever need health care, if you have a student who wants to be a doctor or a nurse, this affects you. It affects every single one of us. Our next guest says that medical school education is in crisis, with social justice and race-focused activism being imposed on students, faculty, and staff. You won't believe what we have discovered. I'm sure you've heard part of it, but you're going to hear it in more detail today in just a second. First, I want to remind you that you can call us at 662-821-2040, or you can write me at sandy@afr.net. You can find us on Facebook at Sandy Rios 24/7, at Twitter, or X, whatever we call it now, at Sandy Rios Tweet. You can listen on any podcast platform. AFR.net is our home base, and you can listen for sure on my website, which is sandyrios.com. You know, we talk about preborn a lot here because I believe in what they're doing. So grateful. And because we believe in their mission, and it's really simple. Their mission is to save as many babies as they can from the clutches of abortion through ultrasounds and sharing God's love, because they do that with moms. And if the dads are involved, some of them are sometimes, they share God's love. They share the message of salvation, the message of forgiveness. It's really important for women who have been through this. It's really the only healing if they do decide to abort their baby and someday later wake up and find out that they really did take a life. It's not just something insignificant in their womb. And so they bring that whole message, the full story, and that's how they help women usually make the right choice when they show them the ultrasound. I say usually. It's over 50%. Some say 60 or 70%. Depends on the stat. But we would ask you if you would consider donating to Preborn. It's $28 for one ultrasound, just $28. And you can do, you know, give as much as you are able to give. Go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Well, for today, I hope you'll relax, maybe take out a pen and paper. This is one of those days. And listen to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness. That we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
Fox News obtaining a bombshell report on the University of Florida's College of Medicine. It shows the school incorporates critical race theory into its admissions process and into some educational programs. Charles Watson has more from Atlanta. Charles?
Yeah, hey, good morning, Mike. So this report comes from a group called Do No Harm, and it accuses the University of Florida College of Medicine of using, quote, equity and anti-racist initiatives, terms the report says are at the core of critical race theory, to indoctrinate prospective and current medical students. The report scrutinizes reading materials and College of Medicine policies that the report alleges pushes diversity, equity, and inclusion onto both faculty and student bodies in respect to the college's curriculum, ethics, and recruitment process. The report points out the College of Medicine's admissions page as an example. In one post, you see students kneeling and holding a sign that reads, "White Coats for Black Lives," which the report says linked to a page that offered reading materials such as anti-racist resources for white people and guidelines for being a strong white ally. The photo and reading materials have since been removed, but there is pushback from some medical professionals at the idea that this kind of learning and level of awareness is somehow destructive indoctrination. The president of the Association of American Medical Colleges says these are issues that students themselves are pushing to address. Yeah, and so Dr. Scorton and other medical professionals point to data similar to this that show people of color largely fare worse than non-white people, than non-people of color when it comes to access to health care and the outcomes. And guys, in terms of the University of Florida College of Medicine, a spokesperson tells Fox News that it has a holistic admissions process. It welcomes students of all backgrounds. It doesn't discriminate. And in terms of its curriculum, the spokesperson says, yes, they do address things like access to healthy food, education, and income, because they say these are all things that affects a patient's health.
All right, that's a report from Fox News. And of course, if you haven't heard, you need to hear that medical schools around the country are now adopting diversity, equity, and inclusion. It's not new. They've been doing it. We'll talk a little bit later about what Ron DeSantis just did at University of Florida. This came out after that news story from Fox, and that is he's done away with their DEI program, done away with their professors, done away from the head of the department. It's really very good news, but it's not good news everywhere. So we've asked someone who's tracking this very carefully to join us this morning. His name is Professor William Jacobson. He is, by the way, the founder and publisher of Legal Insurrection, which is just like it says. It's like a, it is like an insurrection toward the move toward the left, or the lurch, or the jumping off a cliff of the legal profession, whether it's judges or attorneys. They've done just great work reporting on the malfeasance in the courts with attorneys, etc. But also, let me just say that Bill is a graduate of Harvard Law School. He also was on the Cornell Law faculty. I think that's when I first actually interviewed you, Professor. And you've argued lots of cases. Bill has had some important positions and done some very profound things in the legal profession. So when he speaks in critique, it has weight. And so I've asked him to join us this morning because they are tracking medical schools around this country to see where they stand on diversity, equity, and inclusion. Good morning, Professor Jacobson. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Why in the world did you start tracking medical schools? Did something come to your attention? Something in particular?
Well, criticalrace.org was really an outgrowth, the website of all of the activism post-George Floyd. And we began to realize that these ideologies had permeated higher education. So we started off with 220 higher education institutions. We're now up to over 500, but we also started to get tips about what was going on in the medical community, in the medical schools. And so we started that, and we now have covered, we have a whole separate database, an interactive map, which covers all 156 domestic U.S. medical schools. And what we found is that CRT/DEI, whatever you want to call it, I call it the racialization of education, is deeply permeated throughout medical schools. And in some ways, it's worse in medical schools than in higher ed in general. So we, you know, found out about it because we were interested more generally in the education topic. And then we started to get complaints and tips from people about medical schools.
Yeah, so you report in your article, which is what I've used to prep for you today, among other things. I think, did you say that there are like 156 medical schools in this country? Is that right?
That's right, MD schools. So there are osteopath schools that are not in our database. That might be a next step for us. But 156 domestic U.S. medical schools. There are some in some of the Caribbean islands. They are not included. So these are schools located in the United States.
Okay. So, and you say 70% of those schools have embraced, are implementing, are practicing, are indoctrinating through diversity, equity, and inclusion, or critical race theory. All right. So here's the thing, of course, Professor. People don't really on these initials, they're used to them, they hear them, but they don't really know what this means when it's applied to medical school. So what does that look like? What does it look like? First, for the students, what does it look like?
Well, to a certain extent, it looks like what we see in higher ed in general. So mandatory courses in many cases, sometimes voluntary training that teaches people we are a systemically racist country, that it can't be fixed, that and the way to undo those negative impacts on society is to give preferences, to give racial preferences to non-whites, and particularly to blacks and Hispanics, and that is the remedy. So it's very much what goes on throughout higher education, but it's taking place in medical school. And that has enormous real-world implications, because if you're going to prioritize somebody for medicine based on their skin color or ethnicity, you're not treating people as individuals. You're treating them as proxies for groups. And so that's happening in medical schools. And, you know, we've documented it. Our database has all of them. And every single thing we say in there is documented with a source link to the medical schools and an archived link in case that link went bad. So we're not just, you know, saying it's happening. We have documented it hundreds of times with regard to medical schools and thousands of times with regard to higher ed in general. So that's what's happening. It's the same DEI, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion agenda you see elsewhere. And just so people understand all these acronyms. So critical race theory is the theory. It's a theory that we're a systemically racist country. It's a theory that there is no, essentially, the legal system is meant to perpetuate racism as well as other systems in society, such as the medical system. That's the theory. The way it is put into action is through what's called diversity, equity, and inclusion. So they're essentially the same thing, but one is theory and one is action, and it's the actions that we're mostly documenting that what is being actually done in the schools for this.
You know, Ben Shapiro, as you know, has been all over this, and one of his most recent posts, I think his wife went to UCLA Medical School, so he has a lot of interest in what goes on there, and he's done a lot of research there, and he says, there, for one thing, there is a mandatory class called Structural Racism and Health Equity. And some medical students are told to read about wars of indigenous resistance in which Native Americans killed thousands of white people. And then they're told to imagine what liberation could look like. They're also taught blackness and indigeneity, how we can imagine a world in the aftermath of settler colonialism and white supremacy. Decolonization, they say, is not a metaphor. And I guess what that means in plain language is this whole killing of white people is not just talk. I mean, I don't know if they're not saying kill white people, but they are inferring that that was a good thing. So,
well, I mean, yeah, that's the poisonous atmosphere that they're creating, and it carries over to actual medical care. So when two people walk into an emergency room, you should treat each one as an individual. What is their personal medical history? What is the personal medical condition they have? And you should prioritize that care without regard to race based on who needs it most. But that is not what's happening. And this, in fact, happened in the state of New York. During the COVID epidemic, there were some new therapeutic drugs that came on the market, but they were in short supply. And New York State actually issued health guidelines prioritizing non-whites for access to those limited supply therapeutics. And they used the same ideologies that you've just been talking about structural racism and history and stuff like that. So what that meant in the state of New York, at least for a period of time, is that when two people walked into the emergency room, they were not viewed as individuals. They were viewed as proxies for their skin color group or their ethnic group. And that's just wrong. It's contrary to everything that we stand for. I, in fact, sued the state of New York over that. Unfortunately, the court ruled I didn't have what's called legal standing, that because I hadn't contracted COVID at that time and I didn't need the medication. But the Supreme Court declined to accept the case, but in an opinion or in a statement, Justices Alito and Thomas said that, yeah, this case is not right now, but if this happens again, we should take the next case. So I think that this is what's happening in the real world. This is not just making people miserable at school. This is actually impacting medical care. And people need to be concerned because this will kill people. I mean, if somebody is denied access to medication because of their skin color, then that is a racially motivated killing. And we're against it no matter who the victim is or no matter who the, you know, supposed beneficiary is.
Well, you cite in your article, and it certainly hasn't, it happened not that long ago, but I want to remind people that at Wake Forest Medical School, there was a graduate, Kaichel Dei, or Del Rosario. She actually injured a conservative patient. I think it was a blood draw, and then started bragging about it. Can you tell that story?
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember the details of that story, but there have been multiple instances that have been publicized where medical professionals using this CRT/DEI racialized approach to things have bragged, usually on TikTok or something like that, about how they have given negative care to people based on race or based on ethnicity or religion, and they don't seem ashamed about it. And at one level, of course, they should be ashamed, but given the educational system they've been brought up in, where this is all approved, why would they be ashamed? Why wouldn't they go on TikTok and do it? And there have been multiple instances that have been publicized about this. So it's not just a one-off thing.
Okay.
It's something that we're going to see more and more of.
Well, and the big story on that, I mean, that's bad enough. But as I recall, she actually hurt him on purpose while she was drawing blood. I don't exactly remember the details either, but it was a white patient, a white male, and I think she got the drift that he was conservative by their conversation. So she hurt him, and she thought that was funny. But here's the headline is that Wake Forest Medical School did nothing about it. They acted like they did, but she still graduated, and I think they hid her record so that she could get hired. Am I correct about that?
Well, that's, I think, was another Ben Shapiro disclosure.
Okay.
He researched these things. So I'm relying on him for that, but that's what he said, that they not only permitted it, but they covered it up. And so, but this is not surprising because it's consistent with their ideology. And we need to be very cautious about this because when you go to see a doctor, you should not worry about something like that. We're seeing a lot of it, at least as being exposed on social media, with the current, you know, Israel-Hamas war that's going on, where some people, again, not hundreds, but some have bragged on social media that because they hate Israel so much that they will, you know, give negative treatment to Jews or to, you know, Israelis. And they've been exposed, and some of them have been fired. But this is the culture we're creating. We're creating a medical culture where people not only bring politics into the examining room, they also bring these racialized ideologies.
Now, let me just stop to give a commercial a little bit for you, because you mentioned this, but your website where you're actually collecting, you are welcoming people for telling stories or bringing their information on what they're seeing. And it's critical, and also then, of course, you print that, and it's the information is available at criticalrace.org. That's criticalrace.org. I think the question also, Professor, is, are they doing this in admissions? Are they screening students for their political views, for their color? Are they doing that?
I think there's no question about that. I think that that was essentially the Harvard case that the Supreme Court decided. Now, that was colleges, not medical schools. But if you read the diversity objectives, if you read these things on the medical school website, it's very clear they're giving preferential treatment. Whether you can prove it as a legal matter and assert a legal claim based on it is a different question. But there's no question that there is preferential treatment being given. They barely try to hide it.
You know, this reminds me of that story a few years ago. It's hard to keep track, honestly. There's so much news coming out. But it was a medical school where I think it was black students of color, could not pass this particular course. It was bio, not chemistry, bio something. And they actually forced the professor they changed it so that the students, medical students, didn't have to take that class in order to graduate. I mean, that, I have to mention that because it just speaks to the inferior care and that they are actually producing for people of all colors, you know. And also, William, how embarrassing and demeaning for black and minority students who are smart and good students. How demeaning that they should be doing this and that they should be then now lumped into that class of people who want to get ahead based on their color only. And I don't even want to do the work of some of the courses. I think that's, it's kind of like, reminds me of Justice Thomas on the Supreme Court. how embarrassing for him with all of his achievements, that it should be, that it should be polluted in this way. So it does have real world consequences. And I think I want to go back. Abram Kendi is the, he's the one who's, I don't know if he's the fifth original, I think he is, of the American version of critical race theory, isn't he? Abraham Kendi?
Well, he's not one of the original ones, but he's certainly the most popular. So he has monetized the whole concept probably better than just about anybody else. And his, you know, leading book is called How to Be an Anti-Racist. And in fact, it was that book which became recommended reading at Cornell University the summer of 2020 after George Floyd, that my reading of that book for the first time is what eventually led to our criticalrace.org website, because his ideology is so horrendous. His ideology is, and to quote one of his most famous lines, or to paraphrase it, is that current discrimination is justified to remedy past discrimination, and future discrimination is justified to remedy current discrimination. So he has set up an expressly discriminatory program and agenda. And that has been adopted at a lot of schools. And it was Cornell's use of that book and recommending of that book that eventually led me to create criticalrace.org. So, yeah, Kendi is, he's not really a theorist, so to speak. He's not really an academic, but he has popularized the critical race theory approach to life. And he has cashed in very big time. He gets, I've seen various accounts and reports, anywhere from $15,000 to $20,000 for a Zoom conference with educators. And, you know, we've seen proof and examples where school systems hire him for a one-hour Zoom and pay him $15,000 to $20,000. He's sold a lot of books. He has an institute, I believe it's at Boston University, which got millions and millions of funding to help him in his effort, and now is mired in controversy about how that money was spent. I don't think there's any claim of illegality, more that they just were incompetent in how they spent it. And so, yeah, this Ibram Kendi is the go-to guy. He is the guru of this ideology. His book is used widely in education. And in fact, in our database, we show how his book is required reading at a number of medical schools. And why would they require medical students to read that book? There's no good reason for it. It's just ideology and indoctrination.
You know, I have not read that book. I just read about Abraham Kendi and various things, so I'm not an expert on the book. But my understanding, Professor, is that critical race theory basically is all white people are bad. You know, all of the things they've done must be erased. It even goes to the point of, you know, removing classical works from music schools and from educating kids because it was created by white men in Europe. It's the ridiculousness. And then, of course, that indicates that all black people are good, or at least victims, certainly victims, and that they, no matter what they do, they can do no wrong. They can hate white people. That's okay, because white people deserve it. It is so perverse. Have I characterized that correctly?
I think you've boiled it down. They usually don't come out and say that, but that's what their ideology amounts to. Now, some do come out and say it. I don't think Ibram Kendi is quite that bold, but there are many of these DEI consultants, DEI speakers, DEI activists who express open hatred of whites, what they call whiteness. Whiteness, in quotes, is actually a study topic in a lot of schools, and it is the, you know, held up as the paradigm of evil is whiteness. I mean, you know, I've seen that even at Cornell. And so this is really poisonous stuff. And, you know, we have another website called equalprotect.org where we take legal action against these. So because we got so many tips at our criticalrace.org website, we formed another entity, equalprotect.org, which is the Equal Protection Project, where we bring legal actions challenging it. And it is absolutely amazing. We focus on higher ed, but it's in government and elsewhere, how many openly discriminatory scholarships and programs there are in this country. We filed over 20 claims, and we've barely scratched the surface. So it's really a problem. This whole CRT/DEI ideology is poisoning our society and is moving us away from our constitutional principle in the 14th Amendment that everybody is entitled to equal protection of the laws. It's moving ourselves away from the Civil Rights Acts and from various laws throughout the country. And what's most amazing is almost every one of the institutions where we found these discriminatory programs has their own set of anti-discrimination rules that these programs violate. So on the one hand, they say we're all against discrimination. On the other hand, they're actually discriminating. It's beyond amazing.
And we don't have to go into this, but I want to point out that this whole notion of critical race theory comes out of the Frankfurt School on Marxism, which sort of translated the whole Marxist system, economic system, to social constructs. It's Marxist. It's just outright Marxism. And you write in your article, Professor, let me read this. Most people don't realize how bad the situation is in medical schools, worse than in general higher ed. Is it worse than law school?
In some ways it is, because critical race theory, one of the defenses of it is, that's just a subject matter taught in law schools. So nobody hides it. So I would say that medical schools are worse because you don't go to medical school expecting to study legal theories regarding race. You go to medical school to learn how to treat people or to do research or whatever it is. So I think it's worse in medical schools than law schools because it is a recognized legal theory, critical race theory, that is taught in law schools. Most don't require you take it, but do have it available. But you don't expect that in medical schools. And that's, to me, the big issue.
You said that 70% of the 156 medical schools in the United States are pushing this. Well, how about the 30%? I mean, where could people find that refuge of the 30% that are not doing this?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. A lot of people have asked us, why don't you publish a list of the good schools? And the reason we haven't done that is that we think each student needs and parents need to make a decision based on the entirety of the school. The fact that there might be a school that has some of this may not, you know, dissuade you from going there. It might matter whether it's mandatory or it's voluntary. So we made a decision early on with our databases not to create the good versus the bad schools, but it's the question we get a lot, particularly for colleges. Where can I go that I'm not going to be forced to take this? And so our approach has been identify the schools you're interested in, and then go look at our database. It's an interactive database. It's like a map of the United States. You hover over it, you click on your state, and then you see the drop-down menu of the schools we've covered. We haven't covered 100% of the schools, but we've, like I said, covered 700 at this point. And so we didn't want to make that judgment call for people as to what's good or bad and what's worthy and not worthy, but it is something we thought about, and it's a question we get all the time.
And that database is at criticalrace.org. But, Professor, one last question. You were a teacher, and I'm just guessing that you were a fine teacher and that you cared about your students. So there are students listening or parents of students listening. What would you recommend? How would you counsel them on how to survive in this kind of atmosphere? They find themselves into medical school, and they need to finish. This is their life plan. How can they navigate this? How can they?
Yeah, well, it is tough, and I certainly can't recommend to people that you become a dissident, that you object to it and all of that, even though maybe in a better world you'd be able to do that, because there's a high personal price to pay. So I think, you know, people need to make a decision what's best for them. It's a little different undergrad than medical school, because there are, 2,000-plus undergrads. You have a lot more choices, and you can investigate the schools, decide which school has the best atmosphere for you. You may decide now you want to go to school in Florida, not in New York State, because Florida is getting rid of all this DEI stuff. And those, so people have choices. Medical schools, there are very few. It's extremely difficult to get into a U.S.-based medical school, and most students will simply take what they can get. Getting into any U.S.-based medical school is considered a prize, and so people just go there, and if it's a negative atmosphere, they just deal with it. And I say each person needs to make their own decision, and they need to – most students that we interact with, most people we interact with, simply say they just keep their head down. They regurgitate whatever nonsense they're expected to regurgitate. They don't necessarily absorb it. They don't necessarily believe it. They just, you know, go along with it to get through. And it's unfortunate that it comes to that. But for many people, that's the logical choice rather than putting your career online. It's really up to people like me to call attention to it. And thank you for bringing attention to this to your, listeners, that it's up to us. It's up to fight these battles. It's not fair to expect a second-year medical student with their entire career on the line to be the one who stands up to this. I think that's asking too much. Certainly, if somebody wanted to, that's fine, but I don't think we can expect them to fight those battles because we've permitted these systems and these institutions to get the way they are. It's not the student's fault, and it's really the rest of us in society who should be fighting against it.
I find myself agreeing with you on that. I'm usually, advising people to fight. And I'm like you. I'm not advising them not to fight, but we need doctors with discernment. And if they are, if they're discerning and they think this is absolutely ridiculous or just wrong, then if they can make it through those classes and come out as a doctor, God bless them, because we need doctors who have common sense and are not caught up in all of this nonsense. Well, let me just say one more time, this is William Jacobson, the professor. He was a professor at Cornell for a number of years. He is the founder and publisher of Legal Insurrection, which I highly commend to you. And you can find this database or the stories we've talked about at criticalrace.org. And then you have one more we'll mention quickly, equalprotect.org. What's that about, Professor?
That's the Equal Protection Project, and that's our legal arm that fights this systemic DEI discrimination by filing legal claims.
Okay, very good. Equalprotect.org. It's just you've done such great stuff, and I just thank you. Thank you very much for the commitment you have to truth and to trying to sort this mess out, giving your reputation and your expertise to it, William. Thank you so much. Professor William Jacobson, thank you. This is Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Abortion really is going to take front and center in this next election. There's just no question about it. And I think that we have a battle. Those of us that believe life is sacred it's harder now for us to make that case than it was because of the activism of the people that love death more than we love life sometimes. They've made it very confusing on in vitro and other things, and so people are not going to be as clear. And young girls, you know what they're learning in school. They're not learning the truth about the life of a baby. And they're saturated. They are they're indoctrinated. And so with that, I think the very best way to save the lives of babies right now is through preborn, because it bypasses all of the politics. It bypasses all the regulations and rules, the laws. It goes right to the mother, shows them the baby, and then most of the time, truth just kind of breaks through and they decide to keep their babies. If you would like to help preborn, it's $28 for one ultrasound. That's it. Just go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Hi, this is Sandy Rios, and I miss you in the mornings. But now I'm hosting a podcast, Sandy Rios 24/7, which is available at AFR.net and SandyRios.com. Well, I finally finished that book. God's Velvet Hammer chronicles God's call in my life from a small-town girl to Berlin, Germany, Radio Moscow to North Korea to Washington, D.C. I talk about Sasha Girl. It was my disabled daughter. I talk about I Got the Music in Me. That's a chapter on my music life. Lost in India and Other Adventures is hilarious. You won't want to miss it. I talk about my sweetheart, The Blessing of Bruce. And then a mysterious chapter called My Green Face and the end of it all. Oh, I think you'll enjoy it. Like the Apostle Paul, these are my shipwrecks and my adventures, all for Christ and His kingdom. God's Velvet Hammer is available wherever books are sold. And remember, Sandy Rios 24/7 is available at afr.net and sandyrios.com.
Is the goal to ultimately treat patients differently based upon their skin color?
That's exactly right. And that's what critical race theory calls for. Dr. Abram Kendi has said that past discrimination requires present discrimination, and present discrimination requires future discrimination. So the idea is that historical wrongs have to be dealt with and corrected by present wrongs and future wrongs. And this discriminatory activity in healthcare can only lead to more divisiveness and a different standard of care for people based on their skin color, which I think Americans just reject.
It says students must master this stuff. What does quote unquote mastery look like? And if I don't, if I refuse, because, you know, I'm there at medical school to become a doctor, do I not become a doctor if I don't master this stuff?
Well, this is a problem. This will be embedded into the various licensure exams because the Association of American Medical Colleges has an important say in the way licensure exams are constructed. So students will be expected to answer the questions correctly when it comes to presenting this information. And we certainly have many students that have written to us, to our organization, complaining about this. We have one student who famously told us that I've had more lectures about pronouns than I've had about kidney disease. And this clearly can't benefit the medical students and certainly can't benefit the health of the American people.
At a time when we are desperate for new doctors because healthcare is at such a premium right now, we don't need this. This is not helping. Dr. Stanley Goldfarb, thank you for doing what you're doing. You will save lives in the process by doing this. We appreciate it.
Well, as we mentioned at the top of the show, Sandy Rios back with you on Sandy Rios 24/7. There is some good news, and it all goes down to Ron DeSantis, who's back home in Florida being the governor again and doing some incredible things. And this whole business we're talking about today, he's just made this huge decision regarding the University of Florida. And I've asked Bruce to join me to discuss it, honey. What's he done down there?
Well, Ron DeSantis has signed a law that bans the use of state or federal funds to administer programs that categorize individuals based on their sex or their race for the purpose of differential or preferential treatment. In other words, these DEI and CRT preferences that, as our guest was saying, have just become the guiding light for admissions into schools are not going to be allowed here in Florida to determine who gets into schools.
You know, I should jump in and say we didn't say this with William, with the professor. But it's not just race, it's also your gender. It's this whole gender business, diversity, equity, and inclusion, so, and women. I mean, we'll have like a host of, transgender women. You know, this, honestly, I'm making that kind of light, but that's really kind of how bizarre it is.
It is, and what always amazes me is when you look at how many faculty members and administrative people these at universities are using to administrate these DEI programs. At the University of Florida alone, they had 15 faculty members and 13 staff people that were administering the DEI program for 55,000 students at the University of Florida. And then even when these people are reassigned and the cost is eliminated, instead of, say, lowering tuition or putting it into research, something like that. Instead, it's transferred to recruit students. So really, they're trying to still use it for DEI in some ways, but it can't be official. And, you know, I experienced this exact situation when I was applying to the University of Illinois College of Law in 1978. I applied, and I was waitlisted. And I was called right at the last minute to see if I was still interested. I said yes, but I never got a call to go to be admitted to the class for 1978. Well, in 1978, the Supreme Court took a case called Bakke versus California, and what it did is the University of California was expressly committing a certain number of spots in opening classes only to minorities. And the Supreme Court found that that was unconstitutional. You cannot discriminate against white people or other people, whoever's going to be eliminated because they didn't fall into one of the openings that were left over after the minority students. So here's what the University of Illinois did, and I thought it was the perfect solution. They said, we're going to admit 200 students to our incoming College of Law class for 1979. And when we admit the 200 most qualified, then we are going to do an analysis on did we meet quotas that are reflected in the population. And if not, we will create additional seats to the class. And so what happened is our class was expanded from 200 to 216. Everyone was admitted that should have been admitted. Everyone was admitted that needed to be admitted to try to give people a more of an opportunity. And we all went to school together, and nobody cared about were you admitted under this program or that program.
Do you think the University of Illinois is still doing that, honey?
I very highly doubt it.
You know it isn't.
Every time I get my newsletter from them, it's about nothing but DEI and inclusion and trying to get people out of jail because somehow they're only there because of their race.
Yeah. Well, it's really sad what's happening. Of course, now in these medical schools, students are being so, I think, real learning is being neglected for the purpose of forcing this stuff. But the thing about Florida, it's the University of Florida, so it must be the medical school. And Ron DeSantis has taken a step to stop them. I think I read somewhere, Bruce, it's upward of like 60 employees, however that adds up, 60 employees that have been laid off. They're going to be laid off. They've gotten their notices. And I actually think that's wonderful. I think Texas has done something like that. And perhaps this will start, Ron DeSantis has done a lot of great things. I think he has emboldened other governors to do bold things. So we hope this is the start of something good. And I wanted to end with some good news. So thank you, honey.
Thank you.
I hope you learned something today and didn't get too discouraged. It all boils down really right now to politics and also the Supreme Court. I don't think the Supreme Court is going, if this makes it up to the Supreme Court, which it no doubt will, with the current configuration, I think they've been pretty plain that they believe that institutions and organizations should be colorblind and consider people's qualities and their gifts and their abilities, not their color, which is the way, of course it should be that way. If you'd like to call us, if you have a different view, call 662-821-2040 or go to sandy@afr.net. You can go to sandyrios.com and listen to the podcast and find out other things, or you can listen on any podcast platform. Well, thank you so much for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.